Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to All Exits Closed. We're going to talk about the origins of the opioid crisis today. I'm Cynthia Poor, and my guests today are Dr. Tim Bagwell, my friend Jack Garofalo, and Steve Greenfield. So, Tim, why don't you start off? When did this start to become a problem?
I'm sorry, did you say me, Cynthia? Did you ask me?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
So the problem actually starts with in 1976 when student loans are exempted from bankruptcy. But the program begins a long time before that. And just to help the listeners understand very briefly, that the student loans were never like a social welfare program. It was always a program for the banks. It was a program developed first in response to Sputnik through the National Defense Student Loan Act, and then later on through the Higher Education Act. And it was Sallie Mae was created through the work of Edward McCabe, who was Eisenhower's special counsel, who was a researcher for Goldwater and research director for Goldwater and a research director for the Republican Party, and was first chairman of Sallie Mae, and was intimately involved in the student loan program all the way till 2000. So he was the head of Sallie Mae, and it was Sallie Mae that led the charge to many of the exemptions from things like bankruptcy law. I could talk more, but the others, everybody else come in too.
Okay, well, Steve, I'm coming in. You know, we are talking about, you know, not so, you know, I guess the origins of the student loan program is as good a starting point as any, and you know, you're accurately taking that back to 1958, you know, yeah, when the space race began, when the fear of losing the scientific edge to the socialist world, the communist world, was a big motivating factor. The Cold War was at a peak. But, you know, you mentioned 1976, and as a native New York City boy, 1976 is also a watershed moment for us and for, in general, around that time period in California as well and throughout the nation, is pretty much the time when tuition-free public college came to an end in this country. I think we need to contextualize this discussion with the understanding that way back during the Civil War, when certainly there were no public resources available, or so you would think, at the peak of the Civil War in 1863 with the original Morrill Acts, that the priority that this country was setting on competing with the industrializing world of that time by starting public colleges was started during the Civil War. And public college, free or nearly free, and operated at the state level in general and the city level, in New York City in particular, continued on through the mid-1970s. And it's really important to pay attention to that mid to late 1970s period, because the mid to late 1970s also represents the time when, for example, that for 80% of Americans, wages froze relative to inflation. That continues to this day. Wages and salaries have not changed while the GDP has tripled. There was a lot about the United States politically that transformed. A lot of us like to look back and say, you know, that it was the election of Ronald Reagan that changed everything. But in truth, most of this stuff started in the Nixon and Ford era that was going to transform the way the American economy operated and how we divided our classes, that we decided that we would end up the upward mobility for the poor and the working lower working classes that had free college available to them in the aftermath of World War II. It continued through Ford. It continued through Carter. It certainly got worse during the Reagan and first Bush terms, that 12-year period. But then what emerged out of that was the Bill Clinton administration, the Joe Biden era, if you will. The taking away of the right to even discharge student debt among all forms of debt when going into bankruptcy, you know, the last resort by which you could save yourself from complete financial disaster. So this is a long process, and I want everybody to keep that mid-1970s, 1976 period in mind, because, like I said, that represents when California and New York ended free public college, and certainly we have to look at the role that the ending of free tuition-free public college played in forcing more people who wanted college as a way of advancing or to, just to pursue a career goal that was of interest to them, that they then had to take on debt in exchange for that, and contextualize that also with the original function of student loans going, again, back to 1958. Those loans were made available to people for specific majors. Right? They weren't just what the heck go
Correct.
To college. The what the heck go to college era starts with the Higher Education Act, when they removed the need to focus on certain majors that were going to be productive for us in global competition, right? And so what's happening now with the debt crisis, Cynthia, you and I have talked about this many times, is that as the cost of going to college has skyrocketed, and as an average student is now taking out $35,000, leaving college $35,000 in debt, there then becomes an increasing focus by the colleges themselves to promote themselves as return on investment rather than educational institutions. And we're sort of back now where we were, where you probably can't take out a loan at all unless you can prove that the size of your loan is something you can recoup in a single year's paycheck, right? That's what financial aid officers advise you. Don't take out more than 1 year's pay when you graduate from college. Well, if you're going to be in, a philosophy major, then your pay is going to be zero. And if you're going to be an engineer, then maybe you'll be able to pull it off. So we're kind of right back where we were in 1958. And judging the trajectory from 1976 to today, I would argue that not only is this a banking subsidy, but this was also by design to support the general corporate economy.
I would agree. Dad? Real briefly, so our other speaker can get in. Oh, Zach, let him go in. Sorry.
Go ahead. Zach, do you have anything to add?
Sure. So I'm about 10 years out of college at this point, and I'm the director of a statewide initiative that transitions people with disabilities and older adults out of nursing facilities. And then also I'm on the police review board here in Albany. So, I'm trying to work to make sure that we have dialogue between community members and the police department. And, basically what I encounter through this work is, and through my own personal lived experience, is that we have so many people out there who, are being told. I work a lot of times with young people, and everybody's being told that, college is the thing to go to. And so while I don't really have the historical context of what's going on, I certainly appreciate that what we're doing is a total disservice by asking all young Americans, like, this is the pathway to the middle class, this is the pathway to prosperity, when it's not. I came out of college with a ton of debt, and same goes for so many of my peers, and so many people are unable to, begin to save at an early age and then collect that interest long term for retirement. Basically, you get a paycheck and it's going right to the lender. This disproportionately affects people of color, people with disabilities, people from multiply marginalized communities, while what we should be doing is promoting the trades and other alternatives to college as equally prestigious pathways to prosperity. And we're not doing that right now, and it's a huge disservice.
Tim?
The support of both these guys are saying, what Steve was saying earlier, part of what happened in the 70s was, of course, segued into the Reagan era. And what happened there, curiously, David Stockman, if we may recall him, the vice director, wanted to kill the student loan program, but the administration said, hold up, that's not what you think it is. And but what happened was, is that we're forgetting about one thing about the 1965 Act, was that we had Pell Grants. And up until the Reagan-Bush era, it was 70% Pell Grants and 30% loans. Not a bad combination. But that got flipped. In the 80s and 90s, it became 30% Pell Grants, 70% loans, and it's gotten worse since then. So the degradation of that free college, or supported by grants, furthered under the Reagan the Reagan Bush era, and then Steve can talk some more about the Clinton Biden Obama the whole no one's done anything for it.
And it's like, so you know what we really need to be teaching young people, number one, being able to make informed decisions about what they're getting themselves into. But like, you know, there was a time when you could work and literally put yourself through college and come out debt free. And we don't really have that anymore. And then people who are entering the workforce at this period of time, really not prepared, even if you do come out of college or you come out of grad school, because there are no jobs coming out of, you know, coming out of undergrad. And so it's like we're not really teaching people to be prepared to take on, you know, what you need to be able to know to take on the 21st century economy and survive in the workforce.
Yeah.
Part of that was lower tuition back then, and you could have a job and pay for that tuition. And what's happened is, and an inspector general who's probably retired now from the Department of Education, when I was doing my dissertation, described this to me. The student loan program, because it's guaranteed student loans, in other words, the guarantee doesn't get paid is by the government, not by the lender. What happened, he described it exactly like auto insurance. The reason auto parts cost so much was because someone else is paying the bill. And that's what happened with student loans, and so the price of education went up and up and up, largely because of student loans. It was a deal with the devil.
There was a flood of money that ran in, right? The amount of product available remained stable, and it was flooded with money. And so, as always happens, that caused a huge price increase. It's not like the educational institutions were not going to absorb that flood of money. It was certainly in their interest to go ahead and do that. And I just want to also, for Zach, because I'm so much older, I'm 58. I went to college between the ages of 17 and 21 from 1978 to 1982. And I tell you that when I arrived at my freshman orientation, I went to Columbia, and we went to some of our first overviews about the program where we were being introduced in freshman orientation. And I asked the principal speaker at this event, what would be the majors that you think are most associated with, with a good career once you get out of here? And this being a liberal arts oriented college, the speaker at this event said to me, "We don't do that here. If you want a career, you're going to go to grad school. You'll apply to grad school and do that. Here, we just give you a general education. Here, you're going to learn how to think. Here, you're going to." And it's kind of amazing in retrospect to look back at that time. And, yeah, a lot of my financial aid did come in the form of Pell Grants. I took out student loans. The maximum at that time was $2,500 a year. So I left $10,000 in debt, $14,500 with the interest that was being charged on it at the time. But the difference between then and now was that we were actually encouraged, because of the difference in cost, not to dwell upon what major would produce us a high-paying career. We were told that we have time to get to that question later. And so this crisis that we're in right now has fundamentally changed the nature of the pursuit of higher education itself. That's and now it's all about return on investment. There's no, what's the general growth of our culture that could be promoted through a generally educated population? So as far as the trades, go ahead.
I was going to say, you mentioned about two things, return on investment being one of them, and then what was the other one on debt? The thing about return on investment and about debt is that there's risk associated with it. And what's happened is all the risk to the lenders and to the guarantors is all taken care of by the government. The risk to the borrower is not. And what they've done is, just to make sure the listeners hear this, is that it's not just that you have to do everything by loans, is that the statute of limitations on student loans has been taken away. There's no federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act protection. And what's my other one? Those are the primary ones. And you can, of course, you can have your asset seized, especially through income tax offset. And no other loans are like this.
So, you know, brains don't develop, you know, our brain isn't really fully developed till like 25, 26. And what we're doing is we're asking young people to like make these life altering financial decisions that have long term implications, but they're really going in without knowing like what they're doing. I remember like a couple summers I would stay up at school and it was like, okay, yeah, just sign here and you get this money to live here. You know, at that point in my life, that's kind of where I was. A lot of my friends did the same thing. But it's like we need to figure out ways to communicate what the long-term implications of signing some of these forms are. I don't regret going to college at all. It was very beneficial to me, and you know, has helped me in everything I'm doing. But I look at like a couple friends of mine. One of them, he's been out of school. He's older than I am. He's been out probably like 12, 13 years at this point. He has decent credentials. He hasn't even been able to get a long-term job. It's been temp kind of thing. But it plays into the bigger picture that student loans are connected into, just in terms of like, you know, inability. Like if you live out in rural parts of the state, rural parts of the country, you know, if you don't have a steady stream of income, you can't pay for a car. You can't pay for gas. You can't get insurance. You can't get to your job. And so it's like this endless cycle that we're creating. And it's abhorrent, basically, what we're doing. I have friends on the other side of the spectrum, you know, went to law school, pharmacy school, professional school, you know, sign here and get $250,000 and get your degree. So while they're making, you know, a very decent wage, it's all going basically being funneled right back to the lender. And so, yes, they'll get their loans paid off, but it won't be till, you know, their 40s at that point. And then how are you supposed to save for retirement? How are you supposed to buy a house? How are you supposed to do all of those things? So we have a system that's set up to let people fail. Yeah, or have kids.
Yeah, the name of the show is All Exits Close, and it says if a tollway was set up to enter the middle class highway, and then all the exits were closed off, so that you have to pay until you die.
Do not pass go.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Yeah. You know, we're here. You know, it's easy in a political setting to focus on the student debt crisis as a financial crisis, but I really liked what Zach was just introducing just now, and I was trying to touch on it by recounting my own experience back in the late 1970s of being told specifically, start out by training your mind and make your career decisions later, which is that this is not merely a financial crisis. This is a cultural crisis that we're having as a nation. The trend in Europe, in Asia, Japan, China, all of our major trading partners is to make college free. You know, all the leading, including through graduate school, including all the way through med school. You know, they have a bit of a meritocracy system going over in China, but, you know, you're going to college for free. You're getting your training to go and produce for that economy. They understand. And it's not just in China, like I said, in Europe, in Western Europe, in our neoliberal capitalist trading partner countries, the trend right now everywhere, literally everywhere, just like with universal health care, the trend everywhere but in the United States is to make college free again, because it is essential to the cultural preservation of our civilizations that the things that we need contributed to our culture be made accessible to everyone within our culture so that we don't stagnate, not just economically, but culturally and in every way. And the world is leaving us behind, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's like, you know, while we talk about alternative models to college and all that, you also get into the slippery slope of boxing young people in and identifying them at a very early age, probably very prematurely too, just because of brain, you know, brain development, all of that stuff. But it's like if the trades were promoted equally and there was funding for that, there was funding for college to give kids choice, and it doesn't even have to be kids. It can be at any age, I would think, any age of, you know, any age of development, what to do so that when you are ready to make those choices, there is something in place if you want to return to college or if you want to go and learn a skill. But I think fundamentally what we're doing is incorrect, and as Steve said, it's setting us behind.
Well, and what they've done too was they glommed on to the crafts and skill the craft area, and they had programs and they were funding programs, and colleges were being set up for the career colleges, also funded. But so many of them were fly by night, and so many of them did not get jobs for people. And to clear up one other aspect about this, you talked about the professional degrees. You don't see it so much anymore, but the news coverage used to be this doctor or this lawyer who hasn't paid on his student debt, when in truth, most of the defaults were with the career college people, largely minority students, who did not get jobs after accumulating not $100,000, but $5,000 or $10,000 in debt. But a lot
right.
more of them with the $5,000 or $10,000 in debt they can't pay than the professionals with $250 that they're behind on.
Right. And, of course, we're seeing that again now with the era of the for-profit online colleges. You know, we're living in a strange era where the president of the United States was found guilty of operating a fraudulent online college, you know, and was forced to close it down and pay settlements to the people that enrolled. And, of course, that's another element here that's probably not getting enough attention, which is that this newly emerged for-profit online university system that does not really provide any assurance of employment whatsoever, or even of remaining solvent long enough to complete a degree program, is also being financed by the federal student loan program. That's where the real, you know, major crisis is happening right now, just like we're happening in those, you know, in those back in the pickup truck trade schools back in the 1970s and 80s that you were referring to. That's the future of, and of course it's the same target market, right? It's the people that aren't going to travel and live in a residential college. It's going to be more of the lower class people and the people of color that are falling prey. It's really just another system like what caused the mortgage crisis, right? This is a system of predatory lending now. The online for-profit college system, financed through the federal loan program, is definitely nothing short of predatory lending, because there's no future at the end of completing those programs, or even any prospect that you know you're going to complete them.
Well, having some information on the inside of that, full disclosure, I work for a couple of those as an instructor. And the ones who are – there are some successful stories, largely because if you're coming in – with a career, a lot of these programs are not that bad, you know. But if you don't have the career, this is not the place to start. You know, this is, don't expect to start your career with that online degree. But if you're mid-career, you know, and in my field, it's public administration, so I don't feel so bad about it. But, yeah, because I have to work and make money and pay my $9,000 student loan off, yeah. That's just my statement about that.
And all of this starts well before a person is ready to go to college. You know, I think we should be talking about careers and entering the workforce at a very young age to help prepare people for this. And, like, you know, exposing that, like, I don't know if they're still teaching, like, you know, mainstream, at least, teaching, like, tech ed or home economics, but, like, exposing kids at a very early age to those, you know, those pathways and helping them identify what they want to do. So it's, you know, it's not just solely about college. It's about preparing people literally, like, at the very early stages to be able to make those informed decisions when they get to that point in time.
Yes.
Steve?
Yeah, I'm just going to say I'm not sure that that what Zach is talking about right now is actually not kind of an unfortunate side effect symptom that we may be looking to treat of a significant disease, because childhood should be childhood, right? An 8-year-old should be out playing. An 8-year-old should be in the Cub Scouts. An 8-year-old, you know, should be going to school, learning to read and write, learning how to structure an English sentence correctly. You know, some of these other skills that end up transferable to basically anything that you want to do. To take an 8-year-old mind and try to create concern in that 8-year-old's mind that he or she should already be thinking about what's going to happen once the child is an adult and leaves home, I think that that's actually an unfortunate consequence of a systemic failure, and that we need to address the systemic failure. You know, when my parents were enrolling at City College when they were getting out of high school, their outlook was very, very different, right? If they didn't complete the program there, and in fact, neither one of them did in the 1950s when they first enrolled, that was not going to burden them for the rest of their lives. That was something that they could explore. If it worked, great. If it didn't work, also great, right? We have to look at that same period in the 1950s to the early 1960s, the heyday of the trades. Zach and Cynthia, we discussed this the last time we spoke, which is that until fairly recently, you got paid to learn the trades. You became an apprentice at a union, and you were put on jobs, and not only did it not cost you a thing to learn the trades, you were getting paid a small amount of salary while you were assisting the higher-ups and learning how to do that trade. And now, if we wanted to do that, the best you could hope for is to go to a community college, right? We still need trades, but unions have been devastated. They're not able to provide those functions anymore. And so we need those community colleges to be free. We need, you know, as part and parcel of addressing this debt crisis and what it means both financially and culturally, we need to get right back to the source and say, hey, it's 2019. Maybe we have to appreciate the fact that at the very least, we have to consider 13th and 14th grade to take an 18-year-old and release that person as a 20-year-old that's actually trained in something, and that society picked up the cost for that, so that the future prospective employee does not have to assume that level of risk without knowing that there's light at the end of the tunnel. I think we need a more comprehensive approach.
Well, gentlemen, our time is up for today. I hope we can continue this conversation. You have been listening to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guests have Dr. Tim Bagwell, Zach Garofalo, and Steve Winfield. So if you like the show, follow us on Twitter at All Exits Closed. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you, Steve and Zach. I look forward to speaking to you again sometime.
Great conversation.
Yes,
thank you.
Great conversation. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.